Okay, thank you everyone for being here. I guess this is our last week, officially. So I know most of you are after finals, so it's really a big serious nefesh that you're here. I once had a taxi, he was saying how he was a driver, he was complaining to me that people aren't nice to him, and he says, I don't know what they want from me, he says, whenever I take someone someplace, I always go the extra mile. I said, maybe that's the problem. Okay, you know. So, Hashem etzadik ever kainanu v'darka yechbatz. Somebody once said, never laugh at the things your wife chooses, because you're one of them. You know what I mean? So, give the respect. We don't know why we're here, why we're together. Most of the time, it's not for the reasons that we think it is. So that's what Hashem tiftash. Hashem etzadik ever kainanu. Hashem sends us where we're supposed to go. V'darka yechbatz. And we think there's a reason for us to, oh, there you go, shalom. Okay? You don't mind that I threaten you if you don't come? No, chashom. Okay. I was getting nervous. I need the chizuk. I need to see you in those trees in Baltimore. Okay. For being here. So, somebody once said like this. Dolphins are supposed to be the smartest fish. What is the proof that dolphins are smart? They can train humans to stand at the edge of the pool and throw fish. You know what I mean? Like, think about it this way, right? They say once that there was this world-class study of a kid that they showed him a diamond and a nickel, which is worth more, and he kept saying the nickel is worth more because it's bigger. And they were trying to explain to him, and he didn't hop it, and they turned him into a textbook study, and they sent him around the entire world, and people kept giving him nickels and dimes and nickels and dimes. He still couldn't hop. And finally, one big professor called him, and he said, you don't get it that the dime is smaller than the nickel? He goes, tell you the truth, I do. So he says, why do you keep saying the nickel is more? He says, you know how many nickels I accumulated? I would have said to start with, the dime is worth more than the nickel. Right? What would I have? What would I have? So that's the darka yechbatz. There are a lot of things that happen in our life, and we don't understand it. And as I state in the Sfasemis, and the Maral also a little bit, or Tzadik, in different ways, but they more or less say the same thing. After 120, when I come up to Shemayim, we have a lot of kashas. Why did certain things happen? And the Rebbe Hashem is not going to answer the kasha. He's just going to explain why we had to be in that situation. And automatically, things make sense. And that's why it's not good to worry too much about whether things are working out or they're not working out. Do your ishtadlis, do what you have to do, because we're not going to understand anyway why we're in a given place at a given time. And do we understand why Shalom is behind these trees and Yaakov, I can't see you, where are you? No trees, no chasana hall this week? Okay, chasen hol by all. Okay, shbi chasen hol by all of you bez Hashem Yisbach in the right time, and you should be the Baal Simcha. So we've done this before. What do we do? Press the bottom button.
The house on the bottom left.
The house on the bottom left. Okay, got it. And it went off. No, what's going on?
Whiteboard bottom left.
Here we go. And now. Okay, so the tzedakim, as you know, they would wear tefillin on their nose because they were kaifer in Torah Shabbal Peh, and they said the Torah says bein einecha, so they would the tzedakim would wear tefillin on their nose. But the Chazal and Mishai, what's bein einecha? Bein einecha is up here. The optic nerves of your eyes, okay, they actually go, the right side of your brain controls the left side of your body, and the left side of your brain controls the right side of the body. Which is why, Rahman al-Islam, Hashem should protect us all. If someone has a stroke on his right side, his left side is threatened. And the part of the brain that has the optic whatever in it is really, basically, there are optic nerves that run something like this. In other words, from the left side, from your left eye, it runs to the right side of your brain. And from your right eye, from your left eye, it runs to the right side of your brain. From your right eye, it runs to the left side of your brain. And the part of the brain that interprets visual is in the back. Which is why, chas v'shalom, someone gets a zik, it's possible that someone can be blinded, chas v'shalom, getting a tremendous trauma to the back of his head. But think about this for a moment. Where do these optic nerves cross each other? And the answer is exactly where you're supposed to put on your tefillin. So this is the bein einecha, right? So really when Chazal say, here's Bein Einecha, this is really the Bein Einecha, despite the fact that the tzedakah may have insisted on putting tefillin on their nose. So there are so many things that we don't understand. And you can argue from today to tomorrow where Bein Einecha is. And just like you're going to say, oh, really, the Bein Einecha is here. The same is true with all the other kashas that we have in life. There's going to come a time where that's where it is. What gives a person an ability to be able to enjoy life, even though things aren't going exactly according to my schedule? The Beis Yisrael, he had a chassid that was very wealthy. And this wealthy chassid had a shutif that was quasi from, you know. And he brought him once to the Rebbe. And he said, this guy said to the Rebbe that, you know, try to imagine these two people together, okay? So he says to the Rebbe, it's just my shutif, we do, you know, $1 million businesses together. And I just cannot figure out, for the life of me, I cannot figure out, you know, I cannot figure out, what a chassid is. I mean, I speak to my lawyers, I speak to my business professionals, I speak to my accountants, and I make business decisions. And everything is the Rebbe. So he said, I just came to see what is a chassid. So the Rebbe told him, your partner is not a chassid. He said, call in Mechel. And Mechel comes in, and he's like, looks like he's seen better days, and his hat looks like it's seen more bottoms of buses than mechanics did, and he's like, one pay this way, one pay the other way, and his toes are sticking out of his shoes, like Rabbi Yaakov Galinsky said about his shoes in the Vardik, it was the Chulam Paiskam is PM, right? So he says, this guy, this Mechel has been asking me advice in business for 30 years. Every penny he invested, he lost, and he's still asking me advice. He's a chassid. He said, you're shutif, I'm a crystal ball. That's two things. So for the mechels in the world, how does it work? And the answer is that a lot of times the mechels could be happier because they view the world differently. It's not in terms of who I am. You know, the guy that says, your problem is you keep, the Stipler says a lot of times, he can tell who a person is, how many times he writes the word I in his letter. So when one person says to the other, just every second word you say is I. The guy goes, me? Right. So it says like this, right? The Mishnah says in Pirkei Ava is, Ezu machloikis, that's L'shem Shemayim, the machloikis of Shammai and Hillel. So notice, it's not even Beis Shammai, Beis Hillel, but we go up to the Makar for it to be purely L'shem Shemayim. It's the machloikis of Shammai and Hillel. And which is the machloikis which is Shaloi L'shem Shemayim? It's the machloikis of Koirech V'Adase. So L'chaira, the Sfasema says, look what Koirech did. He challenged the authenticity of Moshe Rabbeinu. He challenged Torah Shebal Peh. He challenged Torah Shebiksah. He almost brought Klal Yisrael to ruination. Look what he did, the machloikis. And that was the issue with Koirach, that what he did wasn't so much L'shem Shemayim. What do you mean it wasn't so much L'shem Shemayim? Guy walks in with a machine gun and mows a bunch of people down and goes, you're not doing it L'shem Shemayim. That's not the issue. You're killing people. What does this mean? This was the fault of Koirach, but it wasn't L'shem Shemayim. So the Sfasema says that really Koirach had a shita. It wasn't pashit. Koirach was no pushover. The Arizal says that Tzadik Katama Yifrach is Sefer Tevis Koirach, whatever this means, and Koirach had a whole thing of Pizoyer. He was the Midas HaGvura, and he wanted to bring Mashiach, bring the Geula. He wanted to satisfy even the Midas HaDin, and Koirach had his Cheshbonus, whatever he had. And it may have been a valid position. And it could be, says the Sfasemes, that Koirach could have been a Bar Plukta to Aaron, to Moshe and Aaron, just like Shammai and Hillel. Just like in Shemayim, there's Eish and Mayim. It says there's the Malach Mechol is Mayim, the Malach Gavriel is Eish, and they somehow get along. Eish Shalom Bimroimav. The problem with Koirach, that somewhere along the line, there was an I'll be the Kohen Gadol. And once he did, he blew it. Once there was a Negia, that it's about me, assuming position, then he lost all his validity. So whatever he wanted to do becomes totally so. The Sfasema says, "Ein keli machzik bracha ela shalom." And what does the word keli stand for? So the Sfasema, the keli stands for Kayhanim, right? Either my finger is going off or this thing is going off. Okay. Kayhanim, Leviim, and Yisraelim. That's what it stands for. You look better than that, right? But that's what a keli is. And a keli, generally, a keli is not machzik bracha unless it has this diversification. You have a chavrusa, and your chavrusa just keeps nodding his head and saying, yes, 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 yes. Not much of a chavrusa, right? So the guy was telling me, you know, in Sheva Brachas, his wife, is like, she's like petrified of him. I don't know what I'm doing. Whatever I say, she just nods and nods. And you know, I was like telling her, if I wanted to marry a parrot, I would have. Like I said, yeah. So why don't you just relax? Take it easy. Take it easy. Let relationships develop. So we want diversification. We want challenge. We want Eish Shemayim. But it has to be L'Shem Shemayim. And that's why Vayikach Koirach. And if you notice, Rashi stresses, what does it mean Vayikach Koirach? Lokach Mekach Ra La'atzmoy. Koirach had a valid position. He may have been dead wrong, but it was a valid position. He had a right to bring up that position. But it was about me becoming Kohen Gadol. And Koirach himself may have not chat that. And that's why Moshe Rabbeinu said, Boiker v'yoyda Hashem ashaloi. In the morning we'll find out who means L'Shem Shemayim, who does not mean L'Shem Shemayim. And even though Koirach was a Chacham Gadol, but on there the Sfasem it says, Al Yisal Chacham b'chachmasai. B'chachmasai means, once you have a personal negiyah, once you're not objective, you don't see things. Then you see things from a completely, totally different position. It's something that you see in your own life, and something we have to be very real with ourselves. And a lot of times you see someone that's at least dressed in rabbinic garb, and he does things that are not a Kiddush Hashem. So the answer is, there's a Weltvar, don't confuse Jews and Judaism. You know what I mean? If once a person does something because he calculates that it's good for himself, then he takes the Torah and it gets warped. And it's not where it is. The Chassam Sofer says, the person that's not careful with his mouth, all of his Torah, he says he is compared to a donkey carrying svarim. Donkey's carrying a whole svarim shank. You have a whole shas, you have tzayis and nesivis. But it's not kedusha. It's not internal. There has to at least be a striving for emes. So how do I know if I'm emes? Koirach also thought he's emes, right? They all thought they're emes. So how do I know then? I don't know. I'm not learning, and I'm just a donkey full of svarim, right? So the Rogachev didn't like the Yeshiva Shechakiris so much. So somebody once came to the Rogachev and he asked, he was going, the whole thing, he was like, I shouldn't say he didn't like it, but he was overdoing it. And the Rogachev said, I want to ask you a shayla. He said, when the Balagola, the wagon driver, whips the horse, and the horse is running faster and faster, is it because when he whips him, the knee-jerk reaction of the horse is to go further, or it's because he's scared of the next whip? What is it? Is it the whip or the fear of the whip? So the guy goes, I don't know, I'm not a wagon driver. He said, no, I'm asking you as your expertise as a horse. He said, where are you? How do I know I'm not a donkey then full of svarim? And the answer is, you talk, I have to do some soul searching and say to yourself, what did I do that's not necessarily in my interest, but I did it because I think it's what the Rabban Hashem wants me to do? That's the litmus test. As long as you can find something, even a little bit, and you know you're on the right track. The Satmar Rebbe, when he was first here, was desperate to try to build, and they had nothing, they had the money, so he came to Chicago. The Weizen Rav was there, and there was a parlor meeting for him, and he raised the whopping amount of $500. That was before stimulus checks, so $500 was a lot of money. You know, those are the days people had to actually work for their money, so let's say $500 was the equivalent in the early 50s of $5,000. A lot of money. And the Rebbe went to the mikveh, was considered a success. And the Rebbe went to the mikveh the next morning and he looked at the mikveh and the place looked like it was caving in. So he said to the Weizen Rav, he said, why do you expect people to come here? That was the mikveh then in Chicago in those years, in the 1950s. So he said, I'm going to fix it up. So the Rebbe said, how much do you need? He said, well, the contractor wants $500 to start. So he took the envelope out of his pocket and said, here you go. He said, Rebbe, you came here. People paid for your ticket. You came here. He goes, you fixed the mikveh. So on his way back, he had two gaboim with him. One was Yossel Ashkenazi, he was with him the whole time. The other was the Biksa, the Rebbe. So the Rebbe said to him, can you lend me $100? Because I have to show the people like I came back with something. Or else, what am I going to do? He says, so what did you do? Why did you give it all away? He says, who am I collecting for? Am I collecting for myself? Or am I collecting for... So he gave him $100, and the Rebbe gave him a shtar to pay him back, because he's not supposed to take money without a shtar. And over the next, I don't know how many years, decades, he kept wanting to pay it back, and he never wanted to take it back. And the Rebbe passed away, and before he passed away, he asked that the shtar should go into his pocket. He says he wants to get it from him up there. He did it bedafka, whatever it was. I'm sure he was moichelim in terms of the chayshem mishpat aspect of it, but that was a smart move. There has to be Rav Shlaga Feivel Mendelovich sent his best talmidim to Tells, to start Tells, sent to start Lakewood, and the Rosh Yeshivas were up. What are you doing? You're dismantling your yeshiva. He said, I'm not in the business of making a yeshiva for myself. I'm doing it for the Rebbeinu Shlomo. When Chaim Berlin opened, they said he drew a line on a map down Pennsylvania Avenue. And he said, anyone that lives on the other side of Pennsylvania Avenue, that's, you see it on the Bell Parkway on your way to the airport, that's the same Pennsylvania Avenue, not the one in front of the White House. That's too dangerous. That's a dangerous neighborhood. I'm talking about the one over here in near Starrett City. But he said he drew a line on the map down Pennsylvania Avenue. He said, any bacher that lives on this side is going to Chaim Berlin. They're starting yeshiva, and he's standing on there. I think it's expected. It doesn't mean if Rosh Yeshiva doesn't send away his best people to someone else, that he's not doing things L'Shem Shemayim. But it gives us, what could we say in the context of our life? I'll tell you, there was a Yid, his name was Pinchas Mendel, and his job wasn't such a pleasant job, but his job was taking bodies to Eretz Yisrael. And from time to time, a family wanted, people were originally buried here, and then with Allah Tanayim, they were moved over. So he once asked him, you know all those stories that the body was whole after all these years, did you ever really see it? He didn't want to answer me. I pushed him and pushed him, and he told me there were two that he actually saw the bodies were whole. One was a stone in the Rebbe, Rabbi Yochanan, and the other was Rabbi Shlaga Feivel. And it's sad because again, it doesn't mean we're on that level, but on our level, if you want to, it's just a litmus test, a COVID test, call it what you want, to know that we're going in the right, that we're positive, we're negative, whatever you want to say, is can I look back and say, what did I do? What did I do that is not necessarily good for my ratings, but I did it anyway, because I think that's what the Rebbeinu Shalom wants. There's a great story today in the Dirshu Peseach. There's a young man, he got married, he's a Kalina Chassid. It's right before Shavuos, and everyone's going to give atzev, everyone's going to be with the Rebbe, they're opening up a big shul, and he's all excited, and he calls the Rebbe and asks, can he come? And the Rebbe says, no, you're Shana Rashayna, you just got married, stay home, and make your wife happy. That's the din. He's like, I'm going to stay home to make you happy, huh? Great, you know, I'm supposed to stay home and be in a good mood. You know? Okay, so he stays in Yerushalayim, but his father-in-law went to the Rebbe. See, he's the only man in the house, right? And his shvigar is there, and his wife is there, and his wife of all of a week or something, you know, a day or two, and the kids. And meanwhile, they notice right before this man, he's on the phone, a little funny, right before Shavuos. What are you on the phone for so much? Why are you so much on the phone? Like, you know, they tell him, we're ready lighting lech. He goes, and he's on the phone, so far, kach, what are you listening to? The news, like, they're a little disappointed in him. And then they're saying, it's almost Shkia. And he's like, finally, he's like, okay, it's Shkia. Like, drops the phone. Like, didn't even leave himself time to press off. And okay, and they're saying, you're going to Davin? He says, no. He said like this, Shana Rashayna is like COVID. The Rebbe said it's quarantine. I have to stay home. And if I have to stay home, I can't go Davin. I have to stay home, be Mesameach, my wife. She goes, huh? You go Davin? Because my Rebbe is not here, I don't have where to go. Davin, I'm staying home. I'm saying, Shavuos night, you're not going to Davin? No. Because Shana Rishon is like COVID, you have to stay home. They're like, what do we do? What's that Shafchan's number? Get a hold of him and wring his neck? Nothing doing. Okay, he sits down by the Suda and he's singing Zmiris and he's davening Marev and they're like trying to figure him out. They're getting a little nervous. Night of Shavuos, so she's all proud. She comes with some cookies for him to take along to shul for Shavuos night. I guess in Yerushalayim they don't give the full buffet that they do over here the entire night. So Al Kalpanim, he says if he didn't go daven, he's not going to learn. You're staying here? Shavuos night? Yeah, and he's like sitting, he's staying taken by the dining room table. And his mother says, what's with him? What do we fall into over here? And the next morning, he's not going to Shachris. And they're saying, what? So he says he learned a little bit in Brisk, and there they say that tefillah b'tzibur is only a chiv on the tzibur if there's a tzibur, even though kriyas haTorah they're much more machmer. But anyway, he's going on and on, and they are so angry. They are so angry at him, you can't imagine. They're really scared. She's about to tell her husband, we're going to buy a deer. Don't buy a deer. Who knows if this marriage is going to last? This guy, something's with him. He's acting weird. He's davening, he's screaming on the kalina. He didn't leave the house the last 2 days. Matzah, Yom Tov, they get a call from the father-in-law. He says he's okay, he's on the way home, whatever's happening is happening. And she goes, I gotta talk to you. Like, you don't understand. I'm alive. What? You're alive for what? Of course you're alive, but what would I think? No, you don't know what happened. The bleachers collapsed, you know. So it turned out like this. This kid, when I say kid, I mean he's probably younger than all of you. Okay? And you're married. So he wants to ask the Rebbe who should get mafter, the bar mitzvah boy or the chassan. He said, whoever's older, he said. So Al Kapanim, he said the rumors were much worse than what actually happened, as usually is. Now again, for the person that died, it doesn't make a difference what the rumors were. There's no worse or better. But the rumors coming in Yerushalayim that 12 people died. And the truth is, it sort of looked like a lot of Nisan that were able to bring people. 12 people died and hundreds were wounded. He was, and he didn't hear from his father-in-law. So he was scared that he was, at any moment, that Saul was going to knock on the door and let his shvigar know that, you know, the worst. And she wasn't well, and he figured if he's not home and they come, so at least he'll be there to try to. That was his commander. That's why he decided not to walk out of the apartment the entire Shabbos, thinking at any moment if they come and say that something happened to her husband or one of her kids, he should at least be there to try to stabilize the situation. Now, you got to give this person credit, okay? First of all, when you're 16 or 17, or however old he was, I don't know, let's say 18. You want to go out there to find out. You don't get updated if you're here, right? You want to go out to find out what's doing. And he didn't reveal to anyone what happened the entire Yom Tov. Maybe he did to his wife, I don't know. He was also giving himself a bad press. And yet he decided that was the right thing to do. And, you know, I think it's a fascinating thing. So this is one of my classics. I'm sure you've heard this already. But there's this young kid that gets married, and he's not the world's biggest masmid. Even though the Shadchan said he's an amazing, whatever, he never finished a sentence, but they. You know, 10 trillion times, the Shadchan is deaf, and he says, the way I hear, he's an amazing bacher. Okay, so Akopanim, this kid gets married, he's a good kid, you know, but they find out, he comes to learn, he sits down, he puts his hat down, he walks out, he comes back in, he makes sure the coffee's okay, he takes care of the desks, he's good, he means well, you know. But he's not exactly the world's biggest master. But there's a little between him and Reb Chaim Shmulev, there's a little bit of space, you know. And this shvigar was a shvigar gechal chukas a shvigar kachasai, and she was like, what did we fall in? Like, our sons-in-law are such, and she was burying the kid, instead of saying, hey, he's a good kid, he's a sweet kid, you know, he's a erlicha kid. She's like taking him apart limb by limb. And he went to his Rebbe, telling the Rebbe, he said, what should I do? I can't go there. So the Rebbe said, how much could you learn in one shot? Huh? How much could you learn in one shot? Come on. He said, I don't know, 5 minutes? Come on, you can do better than that. Come on. He said, 15, I think, is my max. Okay. Before you go to sleep, you learn every night for 15 minutes. Choyk v'lo yaver. What's that going to help? Anyway, he does that. As much as he tries to work his way in Kailo, I hate to say this joke, I never say it in Lakewood. The guy got 10 years, his father's going to support him. Then he said he got off a third for good behavior. Okay, no. But the truth is, if you want to learn, then Torah is Ganeid. If you know, if you're not ready to break through your Yetzirah, you know, it's Ganem. So, be it as it may be, he works his way through Kailo, but at night he comes home, he takes out a safe, he learns for 15 minutes. And he was talking, picking up. I know Rav Palm used to say it to people, learn at night, let your family see you learning, guys. I'm telling you, your wife see you learning. Even you're in Kailo, you go to night seder, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, your whole respect, your whole mitzvah changes. There was a guy, the mitziv once told, a guy came to the mitziv, he was one of the wealthiest people in town. He said, I get respect and shul all over my house, they destroy me, they laugh at me. The mitziv said, hire a chavrusa and sit and learn an hour a night. So that night he went, he took out his Shas Gemara, And they asked him, Ta, it's not Pesach. Why are you taking out? That was the only time he took his check to the Sarim. No, he's getting a chavrusa. You? But he said, after a while, it started, like the whole family started, okay, can you take us someplace? Before you learn, after you learn? So Metzia started to change. Rav Kwame, so he said a story. So, and this is what he's doing every night. He learns 15 minutes. Besides, so what he tries to learn during the day. And then the time comes, it's Friday night. He's by his Shriger's house. His Shver is there too, but it's basically his Shriger's house. I'm very rarely home, as you see. And once one of my grandchildren is there, and they, one of them said to the other one, like a four-year-old to a four-year-old, who's that? And one of them said, he's the Zaidi who lives in Bobby's house. I said, uh-oh, okay. Straighten these kids out a little bit here. So she's like the boss of the house, and he's there. And he went to a Shalom Zachar, and he comes back Friday night, and the Shabbos clocks turn everything off. Didn't learn for 15 minutes. He did not learn for 15 minutes. Yeah, he's very upset. He says, I can't, no, I got to do it. And he figures that if he goes out on the marpeset, right, the porch, he said he can, like if he angles himself on a 45-degree angle between the moon and the street light and something, he can like get a little bit of the Gemara in. And he's doing it. It's late at night. He came back late from the Shalom Zach. Meanwhile, his Shviger hears somebody on the porch. She gets nervous. She picks up an umbrella. Apparently, she's not very well versed in Hilchos Muktzah. And she walks out. She's about to whack the guy. She goes, Bah! My son-in-law! A secret tzaddik! Makes believe like he's not learning. And by night, he goes out. The whole neighborhood was up. They had to hear it. Of course, then she told her other sons-in-law, I never saw you learning in the middle of the night, in the middle of the porch. I don't know if she did. So he went back to the Rebbe. He said, hey, that, you know, maybe I should tell her the truth. That, like, she thinks I'm a big... She said, you do what you have to do. Let the Rebbeinu Shalom put things into place. Don't, you don't have to tell her anything. We try. That was a difficult thing for you, and you did it. And that's where the bracha goes. That's where the bracha goes. You know that people, I've heard this from wealthy people, people spend their whole lifetime investing. And their success came from one moment where the window opened. And this is when a window opens. When you have an opportunity to do something which you really don't want to do. And that's closing your eyes and not looking at something. When you have no reason in the world not to, you're all alone in a room, it's really got this whopper of a lashon hara. You can really whack your sister back, you know what I mean? And you hold yourself back because you know everyone's going to be embarrassed. Those are moments. You're kind of for your life. So if you're learning Masechtas Yuma, the Gemara says like this. The Gemara talks about backing away from a tzaddik, backing away from a Rebbe. So the Gemara says that Rava, when he left Rabbi Yosef, he went backwards. And he, so much so that he mamash crashed into the doorway and he was bleeding. So Rabbi Yosef said, what happened? So they told him that Rava walked out backwards. And so he said, Yehi Rava, Rabbi Yosef gave Rava a bracha, the Terim Roshach Akula Karcha, that you should be ahead of all the yeshivas in the city. Rabbi Yosef was a Saginor, Rabbi Yosef was blind. Why was Rava backing out? The Rabbi doesn't see him anyway. Bishlami Rebbe sees you. Okay, so, you know. You want to show the Rosh Yeshiva, you have Derech Eretz for him, right? So Rebbe doesn't see him anyway. Why was he backing out? And he did so with such mysterious nefesh that he said, so here's what Rabbi Yosef said, that this there's that nekud of L'Shem Shemayim. I'm doing it because Hashem is looking at me, not because I'm trying to win brownie points with anyone. Doing it because it's the right thing to do. Here's where he got the bracha. Now, what does this mean? You should be the bracha over the entire town. So the Marsha says, Abaye had his yeshiva and Rava had his yeshiva. When did Abaye and Rava talk to each other? I guess when the yeshivas got together. I don't know. He says, after Abaye was nifter, they all came to Rava's yeshiva. Okay, Abaye and Rava, like, I think they had a disagreement or two, right? No. But that's Eshemayim. That's Shammai and Hillel. And that's why it comes together. Okay, so you know my story. This guy goes up to the Pareichis and he says, you know, he says, please, Borei Olam, I need Sarich HaSeres, Allah for a dollar, I need a Sarich, I need $10,000, please. And he closes the Pareichas and he slowly backs off, covered, he's backing off, and he falls down the three stairs in front of the Pareichas and he gets up, he swings the Pareichas over, and he goes, Loretzeh, Aldachof, okay, you don't want, but don't push me, all right? Okay. So I was thinking to myself, they said that Amazon, with Jeff Bezos, announced today that he and his brother Mark will be among the first humans to fly the crewed space flight from his rocket company, Blue Origin, next month. They're going to be flying into space. That's a problem when you're bored with life. You and you have too many millions, you get into rockets to fly into space. I say you want suspense, danger, or excitement, take the subway. That's just as good, right? Drive on the BQE, you know what I mean? The everyday life, down here in this world, the everyday grind, when we act with amunah. And if you're struggling in your amunah, this is a very important yisoid. The Sfasema says in different places, it's one of us where I'm saying, I'm struggling with my amunah. Then do something that it doesn't make sense. You would do it unless you have amunah. And your action will influence your lev and your machshav. In other words, take it from the opposite direction. I'm removing an app on my phone because it's not leading me to good things. There's no one in the world that's going to see it. I enjoy it. I saw things that ought not to have seen. Come on. Like, why not? Why not? Because there's a Rabbanu Shalom in the world. But I'm struggling with my amunah. Good, start over here. Work your way backwards. Beficha bilvavcha lasoisai. Generate the amunah in your heart. Are you going to say Hashem needs my gesture? Yeah. That's why Hashem created the world, for your gesture. So one of the Miron families, he said, like, when they were sitting shiva, this guy walked in, like a real moshav farmer. They call the farmers a certain Israeli name for it. The guys that are real, you know. No, the one that work on the ground, you know, he didn't look his sideways baseball cap and his shirt wide open and a kibbutznik, whatever. And he puts on a whole basket of fruit and he wipes the tear from his eye and he goes, "My heart is with you. I don't know what else to do," he said. He said, he all burst into tears. What the tomatoes he brought didn't solve their problems. But he did what he can. That's what Hashem wants us to do. He wants us to do what he can, he wants us to believe in ourselves. So you know the story, you know, we're running late, but you know the story, this I heard of Shabbos, is a great line. This kid, he was never successful in yeshiva, didn't feel the boys respect him, didn't feel his magid shiur was giving him enough respect, and he's uptight, and can't get a chavrusa. He says, even a cab doesn't stop for me on the street. And that's Yisrael. So one day, somebody told him, go in and buy yourself a brand new hat. That's what's going to do it. You have a brand new hat, it's going to... So somebody gave him money, and he bought himself a brand new hat, and he goes out, and taxi, stops right away. Hey, it works. Comes to yeshiva. Good morning. Good morning, guy's smiling at me. Want to learn with me today? Yeah, my chavrusa is not here. You want to try it? This really works. End of the day, Tisha B'Av, he can't find his hat. Can't find his hat. He's crying. Comes home, his friend, why are you crying? My hat, this is my whole life, my hat. He goes, here's money, go to buy yourself another hat. He walks into the hat store the next day. And the guy says, I was looking for you. He says, what are you looking at? What are you looking at? He says, you left your hat here. Wasn't even wearing his hat yesterday, right? So a person has to believe what your kaiches are. The Rebbeinu Shem wants you. Tonight's the yard site of Rabbi Yisrael Zev Gustman. He was 18. He was a musmuch by Rabbi Chaim Eiser. It was an unbelievable thing. That was a lifetime thing. He prepared himself in all Dalit Chelke Shulchan Aruch. The most complicated shilas in the world came to him. He said the Nazis ripped out his beard and they shot his kid as he was holding him. And he came home and they were starving to death and he sold the kid's shoes and he gave the food to his kids. He couldn't eat the food. So he says, nobody can threaten me. He was a big askin. Because I had the ultimate covet and I had the ultimate bezyinus. So I know I'm somewhere in between. I can do what I can do. It's very interesting. They once saw him, he was watering plants outside of his yeshiva. Like, I didn't think he was the kind of guy into gardening. So he said to them that Reb Chaim Eiser once took him out into the woods and showed him which plants are poisonous, which are not. And during the war, when he hid in the woods, that saved his life. So he said, Al Sakara Satayev, he found those plants that he lived on, he planted it, and he kept watering it. That was an Indian of trying to show who he is. So Nira Moshe says, V'yichal Moshe Moed, Moshe was very angry, V'yayimer El Hashem, Al Tefen Amuchasam, don't take their things. He says, don't take their mencha, don't take their tyrus. And even their chalik in the tumet shall shacha, don't accept it. So Rav Moshe says, what do you mean? How could you not accept it? Everyone gave him Machsa Shekel. You're automatically part of the Tamid Shel Shachar. So Rav Moshe says, that's down here. But Klap Hashemaya Galia, Hashem knows, even if a trillion people all gave him Machsa Shekel for something, Hashem knows what's in your heart and how difficult it was for you to do it and the courage that it took. And Hashem could say, you know, imagine a fire engine racing to a scene and we say, well, they saved people's lives. Whoever paid taxes is paying for the fire engine. They saved those people's lives. And imagine Hashem will say, no, but this person gets credit, and this person doesn't. It's like everything we do is measured in Shemayim. Tefillah B'Tzibur, where do we learn Tefillah B'Tzibur from? Teich, from the Meraglim, from Kairach. There's 1,000 people davening. Who gets the credit? I don't know, somewhere in Koyrach's people, there's someone there. So to wrap things up, Rabbi Isai, I remember once I took out I was giving my Maisu money before Rosh Hashanah. And I don't know why, the things that had a raffle ticket, you could win something. I like that Maisu, I don't know why. So I saw it says 10 days vacation. It's 10 days Sukkot's vacation. I said, I can use that. And I wrote out the check. And then I saw it says 10 days Sukkot's vacation in Borough Park. I live in Borough Park. I said, with my luck, I'm going to win. You know what I mean? But I figured I wrote the check already, I didn't know if I could take it back. So I sent it off. And I was telling someone about it, a friend of mine. And this friend, his kid was hit by a car, Erev Shuas, and he was rushed to a local hospital. They weren't sure if he was bleeding in the brain, Chas v'Shalom. So he wound up, Sala took him to Columbia, and they put him under observation. He was there the whole Yom Tov, and he came home, Matzah Yom Tov, he's okay. So he walks into my house, Matzah Yom Tov, says the kid is okay. I said, great. He tells me, you know something? He says, to get to be home a whole Yom Tov, Yitaka won the lottery. Don't take it for granted. Don't take it for granted. Who says being home is not winning the lottery? One of my rebbeim said before I got married, you never know by the time I see you next, time I see you by September, you go be married already. So, got to get the thing. So, he said, I want to tell you about a doorknob. That's what he told me before I got married. I said, is he okay? I'll tell you about a doorknob. So, first he told me about Shlomo Zalman, before he touched the doorknob of his house, he made his payas straight, his beard, because it bothers his wife when his payas are out. Mind you, he's 85 and his wife is 84, you know, but it bothers his wife. You got to learn how to do that. Okay. Then he said like this. He said, my Rebbe was also close to 80. Rabbi Yisrael Spinner. So he said, I'm married 60 years. When I come to my doorknob, I think about a few things. Every time I open the doorknob, I think I have a family to come home to. Hashem, don't let me take it for granted. I may open the door and I'm not going to find things the way I would like. Give me, let me deal with it. Don't let me get angry. I'm opening the door, let me have an asiyas chein as a father and a grandfather. I said, Rebbe, every single time I turn the doorknob. Then I kiss the mezuzah and I walk in. I said, I think you could kiss the doorknob. I think it's also a chayfet shomitz. Right? From the worst possible place. We just have a craving. So tonight's the yard site of Radovid Trink. So you know the classical story. Is that this kid in one of the yeshivas that he's in, and two kids pack out Friday night, and they go to a movie. And he goes, they may have taken a cab. He walked close to an hour and a half. And he came to the movie house, and he begged them to let him in without paying. And he had a way of doing it. They let him in, and these two guys are watching the movie, and they're eating their popcorn, and you're not going to believe who's here. And he sits down between them. And they're like, and he goes, guys, it's freezing outside. You left without your coats. Because you don't want anyone to realize that you're leaving. You catch pneumonia. And he took off two sweaters that he was wearing and he put it on each one of them. You know, and they're sitting and, okay? The rest is history. What does it take for us to do something which is opposite of what we want to do? But Hashem, this is what you want me to do. And I think that when you have that opportunity to do so, It's a window. It's a window of bracha. It's a window of nachas. And if Koyrach lost it and he went down, it's a simon that when we do it, it's a bracha of going up. So you should all have a gezunt zimmer as a Hashem Yisbarach. Hashem Yisimchis and nachas and bracha. And we should find that moment that you're kaina and you're rich forever after. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining us.